have a few exhibits I'm gonna wanna put over ahead before I do that.
Multitasking over there.
Okay.
I'll go ahead and start while she's putting that in. Good afternoon, my name is Michael Lenhart. I'm with Lenhart Traffic Consulting. I'm a registered professional engineer with the state of Delaware, registered professional traffic operations engineer with the Institute for Transportation Engineering. I represent the Lewis Partnership for Managing Growth and was involved with this project, representing them back through the 2009 application as well. I'd like to add on to Mr. Sergovic's presentation briefly and then make a few points. Sussex County Code, as was discussed earlier, for the environmentally sensitive development district requires that for all items that shall be included for review for all rezoning applications, Section D of this, of 115.194.3.b.2.d states the applicant shall submit an environmental assessment and public facility evaluation report. The plan shall address the following issues, and D of that is that the analysis of the increase in traffic and the effect on the surrounding roadway system. Now, there was some discussion on whether this satisfies one of those four items. I think one of those could be argued that it would, if this is 75,000 square feet. And there's the ability to come in with 74,999 square feet versus 75,000, and that that in itself gets around the requirement for this application. I still think there's a need to look at the effect of this rezoning on the
Could you repeat that just because the attorney just walked back in? I want him to hear what you just said as well. Just
sure.
If you wouldn't mind.
So the I was discussing the discussion Mr. Server had about the environmentally sensitive development district and those four items that you mentioned, one of which is for 75,000 square feet or more, and this is an application for B1 with 75,000 square feet of commercial use, and so that's very close to to the requirement. And then there's the potential for future, like a piecemeal rezoning in the future. If this gets rezoned, that now there's infill development in the future, and it allows for a piecemeal application that usurps the ability to adequately assess these impacts.
It's all rezoning.
And so yeah, it says it's for all rezoning applications.
Mm-hmm. But again, it says all rezonings if one of those four criteria is triggered. And I understand what he's saying is,
sure.
You know, there's basically the argument is there's a workaround. If you just carve it up into 75,000 square foot parcels, you would avoid the operation of that. And I know I don't dispute that. I also just, okay, to say that code wasn't followed, I don't want that suggested out there either, that we didn't do something, because the code has specific requirements and they were followed.
So. Sure. Okay.
I mean, it's a concern. I completely agree with that.
Okay. So whether or not that is required, I still think there's a responsibility to consider the impact of this rezoning on the road system. The applicant relies heavily on a traffic impact study that was conducted over 10 years ago that has old and outdated data, and I believe is no longer reliable, and I'll get into that information. In any event, the that section of the code that does require the analysis of the increase of the rezoning, that requires that you do an analysis of the roadway network and the study intersections with the existing zoning. The existing zoning for this 11 acres would allow for 23 residential units. The proposed zoning would allow for 75,000 square feet of commercial retail. That net difference between the one and the other is really what you need to evaluate the impact of this rezoning. That was not done in 2009. There's nothing on record that has done that type of evaluation. The 2006 traffic study that they did only looked at the ultimate proposed build out.
Okay.
The traffic impact study that was prepared over 10 years ago was prepared for a different project. It did not satisfy the code at that time. The 2006 study showed significant failures at most of the study intersections, even with the improvements that they proposed in that study. They noted that there's major failures, major improvements would be needed, yet they identified improvements that would do a little bit, but there'd still be failures at many of these intersections. There's been no study or analysis with this application to determine what the impacts would be with this application. The 2006 study further omitted numerous critical intersections, including State Route 1 at Savannah, State Route 1 at Dartmouth, State Route 1 at Postal Lane, and King's Highway as you go down into the town where you hit 3rd Street there and Savannah. None of those intersections were included in the traffic study, yet they had significant amount of traffic going through those intersections. We conducted an independent analysis in 2009 using synchro modeling software that was provided to us by DLDOT. We used the traffic flows from the 2006 traffic study, and those models that we conducted showed major failures along King's Highway from the intersection of State Route 1 through Gills Neck Road, through Clay Road, Gills Neck, and down to Freeman Road, or Freeman Highway. In August of 2016, we conducted new peak hour counts on King's Highway. The peak hour on Friday, August 5th, 2016, was 51% higher than the weekday peak hour volumes that were obtained in 2005, 51% higher. The peak hour on Saturday, August 6th, was 19% higher than the 2005 traffic counts that were used as a part of the original traffic study for this. These are substantial increases in traffic conditions, and I would submit that the 2006 traffic impact study is no longer reliable because there have been significant changes in traffic. In fact, the traffic counts that were used for the weekday evening peak hour traffic in the 2006 traffic study were exceeded beginning Friday morning at 8 a.m. and then traffic rose up to 51% higher about midday and then came back down, but by 6 p.m. they were still equal to or above the counts that were in the 2006 study. So for the entire day, the counts were higher than what was in the 2006 traffic study. The existing zoning would accommodate 23 residential units. It's approximately 17 trips in the morning peak hour, 22 trips in the evening peak hour, 20 trips on a Saturday midday peak, and 209 trips per day. The proposed B1 with 75,000 square feet of commercial would generate 131 morning peak hour trips, 494 evening peak hour trips, 725 Saturday peak hour trips, and 5,633 trips per day. A small portion of these would be pass-by traffic that would be pulled out of existing traffic on King's Highway, but it's a small portion. It would still result in approximately 2,000% increase in traffic over and above the existing zoning, and roughly 4,000 new vehicles on the road per day, not including the pass-by trip. There were, on August 5th, there were 22,500 vehicles that we counted on Kings Highway between Clay Road and Gills Neck Road. So we're talking about adding approximately 4,000 new trips to that. That's approaching or exceeding the ability of a two-lane road to carry that kind of traffic. The applicant included a large portion of their presentation identifying properties that have been rezoned in recent history. One of my client's major concerns is that this B1 rezoning will be approved and that the applicant will be before this body in 2, 5, or 10 years using the approval of this project as an additional support for further rezoning and infill of adjacent properties to higher intensity uses. And were you able to get this?
I'm not able to take care of that. I apologize.
Sorry. I had several exhibits. They were aerial photos of the modeling that was conducted in 2009 that showed Kings Highway from State Route 1 going up through Clay Road, through Gills Neck Road, and up to Freeman Highway. With all of the improvements that were proposed and approved, with the larger development granted, but there were major failures and queuing along the entire roadway all the way back to Freeman Highway. Now, there have been statements that, well, this is a smaller development, and we have an approved traffic study, so it's okay. Well, the approved traffic study did not result in the approval of the prior rezoning. That was denied. I don't think, personally, professionally, that we can rely upon a study that was 10 years old that showed major failures and say, well, this is less, so it's going to be okay. We don't know what it's going to be. We don't know if there'll be failures. We know traffic has increased substantially. So the existing traffic from the old study is no longer valid. That study evaluated a completely different application. This is a new application. It should have a new study so we could look at it and see, does it work, doesn't work, what improvements should be required, or should it be denied outright. The applicant noted that they will be required by DLDOT to provide a traffic operations agreement if this rezoning is approved. They spent some time discussing the differences between a traffic operations agreement and a traffic impact study. But if you approve this today, the traffic operations agreement will only be used to size the improvements. They're going to look at the intersection where they're supposed to build a left turn lane, a right turn lane, and they're going to say, well, does it need to be 300 feet or 350 feet? That does nothing for capacity. That does nothing for the queuing, for the failure, for the delays that people experience out here. The TOA, if this is approved, the TOA will not address concerns. The traffic impact study, I believe, is critical to your ability to be able to see if this application has a negative impact or if it's acceptable. And the lack of that traffic impact study and the reliance upon an old one that's out of date, as discussed, I believe is insurmountable as it relates to your ability to evaluate this application and see if in fact, there are adverse impacts. So in conclusion, we respectfully request denial of this application because from a traffic perspective, I don't believe you have adequate information to make a decision. The only information you do have from the 2009 study showed major failures out here. There's no way to interpolate that this is smaller, so it's going to be okay. We can't do that with the data that we have. And that about sums up my presentation, I think. And the other thing that I had on my thumb drive that I was hoping to show, it's actually in your packet. If you go to If you go to page 10, this was a trade area. It's a map for the benefit of the audience. This is a map of the area out of the comprehensive plan. And it has concentric circles as rings with this property in the center of the circles. And then we've identified a 3-mile trade area as the inside circle, a 6-mile trade area as the outside, or as the middle circle, and a 10-mile trade area as the outer circle. And you can see even, and I'll talk about those trade areas in a moment, but you can see even the 3-mile trade area goes well beyond the neighborhood here, the village center. It incorporates the entire town of Lewis. It goes over to the other side of Route 1. It's extensive and substantial. Now, the trade area, this is, if you go to page 12, there's a table. This table was obtained from the International Council of Shopping Centers, and it's a breakdown of their definition and the research that they've done on different shopping centers. And they have regional centers, super regional, convenience centers, neighborhood centers, which is probably the most similar to the village center in this case. They also have community, lifestyle, power center, theme and festival centers, and outlet centers. And if you look at the neighborhood center and you kind of go across there, it has an average square footage of 75,000 square feet, it average of 3 to 5 acres, and a trade area, typically anchored by some sort of a supermarket or grocery store, and a trade area of 3 miles. Now, one thing I would point, so there's where we drew the 3-mile radius, the trade area. Now, if you look at this table, though, and you assume here there's an 11-acre parcel that they're dealing with, if you look at some of the other factors on here, a community center is 10 to 40 acres. It has a trade area of up to 6 miles. A lifestyle center has a trade, or has an acreage of 10 to 40 acres, and it has a trade area of 8 to 12 miles. A theme / festival center can fit with on 5 to 20 acres. That has a range or a trade area of 25 to 75 miles. An outlet center can fit on 10 to 50 acres with a trade area of 25 to 75 miles. So the point in this is showing that if a 75,000 square foot center is approved here, or B1 is approved, there's no guarantee, as some discussion has been had, about what the uses will be on it, what it will look like. Is it going to be designed and leased to serve the neighborhood, or, you know, it could carry a different type of design, different flavor and purpose, and it could have a much greater impact on some of these off-site intersections. So that sums up my presentation.
I have a question.
Mr. Deaver.
Did you cite anything in the code? I missed some of the things you said. I was trying to put it all together. I'll have to go back and listen to it later.
I cited the same section of code that Mr. Sergovic was discussing, and then
again,
Mr. Robinson. It's 115-194, mm-hmm. 0.3, point B, 2D.
2D. Okay, thank you. Yes. 115, I'm sorry, 115, 194.
Point 3, point B, point 2D.
Point 2D. There was no E in there. I guess I misheard.
Well, there's okay. An E in the one, some of the other
in the
ones,
other thing. Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
A quick question, Mr. President.
Mr.
DelDOT didn't require a study, right? Because of it's downsized.
It's downsized.
And that was a rationale,
I'm guessing,
right?
Yes, and I believe that there was an agreement signed in.
Well, it doesn't matter. I'm going to suggest is if your study, did you do it, do you feel your study would be sufficient to send to DLDOT to have them analyze it? And we get a response?
No.
Because it may trigger, say, you've raised some issues that they weren't aware of or something like that. And they may say, they could comment back to the county that they feel now that maybe a study would be, should be required. Is that?
I would be happy to provide my information.
Well, they're the experts. We aren't. And that's why I say we need to, somebody needs to look at your study that has some expertise.
Didn't really do a study. I did new traffic counts.
Okay.
I mean, a traffic impact study would then take those counts.
Right.
And it would add in approved background development in the site, and it would evaluate the intersections.
Well, do you think your study would provide any new information to DLDOT based on the old study, what they had, any numbers? If they were sufficiently changed or something, they see something, I would think that they would look at that and feel obligated or feel a responsibility to respond to the council on what their response was to your study.
Sure.
But you didn't do a study.
I didn't do a study. I did traffic counts.
I'm just saying whatever you want to call whatever he's done, I'd like maybe to have DLDOT just look at it.
Well, we're going to hear from DLDOT in a moment.
Oh, that's right.
So.
I'm sorry. That's right.
That's that, too.
Okay. Sure. And DLDOT's heard it then. Okay, thank you.
You jumped the gun, George.
I did. I forgot that part.
Yeah, one of the reasons we've been asking DLDOT.
They heard you, and they are here, George.
Mr. Deaver.
Yes.
Typically, they are.
I'm a little bit slow, and the last speaker talked about this environmentally sensitive developing district overlay zone. And that is not really, I don't think that's for you. But
okay.
It is required that they supply all of this information. I'm sorry, but it is. And in 15194-3, this is a rezoning, and it has to have all of these. It meets all these requirements. Has to have these plans.
Mrs. Deaver, just because I don't want there to be any misunderstanding.
It is zoning.
It is zoning.
And B1 is zoning. CR1 is zoning.
No, you're right. No, you're absolutely right. So it is a rezoning. That's the first sentence, but the rest of it says that for those to apply, they must involve one or a combination of the following. So it doesn't start with whether or not it's rezoning. It does start with that. It finishes with whether or not it's one of those four items that would trigger the additional application requirements. As I said, it's not an RPC. It's not 50 or more dwelling units. It's not 75,000 square feet or more of floor area. And we've sort of talked about that.
Well, they're asking for 75,000 square foot. Isn't that the app?
It's
conceptual?
It's less than 75,000 square feet for B1.
No.
And any
excuse me. We do not need any comments, okay? We're trying to get this very, very peacefully, very quietly. Everybody gets this is what's going on. So it's hard to hear him when you're making comments out there. Just be courteous is all I'm trying to say.
Help me follow you.
Sure.
What, which is about the 75,000 square feet. Seemed to me that it fits right in with that.
No, because B1, by definition, the total gross floor area of any building or group of buildings shall be less than 75,000 square
feet. All right.
So there, by definition, if this was approved, it would be less than 75,000 square feet.
So this is any development containing 75,000 square feet or more.
Right. And I hear what Mr. Servais.
We are talking about 75,000 square feet.
I just want it to be clear that the county has followed the code requirements, and we haven't omitted any requirements that are specified in our code with regard to the environmentally sensitive development district overlay zone.
Well, I can read. I just have to say that.
Can I just clarify?
Yeah.
I said the applicant did not meet those code requirements.
Right.
I said the Planning and Zoning Commission didn't address it.
Right.
I didn't say the Planning and Zoning Commission didn't apply it correctly. I just say they didn't address it. To me, the intent of the environmentally sensitive district is to protect certain major land uses.
Of course.
And if it's 74,999. It doesn't require it, but if it's 75,000 even,
uh-huh.
Okay, it does.
Yes.
I mean, that is
yes.
that is, that's kind of an argument, is how many angels can you dance at the head of a pin? The intent of the environmentally sensitive district was to curtail applications and have all the facts out in front of the county. I'm saying the intent of the ordinance should be applied to this application.
Okay.
With that said, I'll ask Mr. Kelly to come up.
That's what I'm saying. Sorry.
Good afternoon. My name is Joe Kelly. I've been a part-time resident of Lewis for over 66 years. Not quite 80 years, but 66 years.
I'm not quite 80 either.
For many years, I was in charge of litigation for AstraZeneca, including responsibility for environmental matters.
Oh, boy.
Since my retirement from AstraZeneca in 2002, I am president of a company engaged primarily in environmental remediation. I'm also president of a nonprofit in Newcastle County called Save Our County. As president, I led the effort, which resulted in a 5-0 Supreme Court decision reversing a Newcastle County rezoning because of the failure to provide council with a traffic study before the vote approving rezoning. The Barnamill case bears a striking resemblance to what I hear going on here today. Based on my environmental, legal background, and my concern of a citizen of Lewis, it's my considered opinion that this village center rezoning should be defeated because of the threat it represents to Lewis water wells and the lack of a traffic impact study. I just don't want to repeat what others have said, and I faxed in my paper, and I hope you have a chance to read it. But just shifting a little bit to the water wells, no disrespect to the county ordinance, but when we deal with groundwater problems, and I deal with them in the West Coast primarily, we deal with the state. They have the expertise. We deal with the EPA. The county officials, just no disrespect, they just don't have the expertise to come to grips with these problems. I might even add that I notice the applicant has a geologist. He submitted their expert statement. That's like if you have a tumor on your brain and you think it needs to be removed, you go to a general practitioner instead of going to a neurosurgeon. I always employ hydrogeologists. That's their expertise when you're dealing with groundwater problems. Now, to respond to the question of Mr. Cole and Ms. Deaver, I'll just read one sentence from the PLUS report. It says, DENREC acknowledges that the Sussex County has a source water protection ordinance in place, but DENREC recommends that the project go beyond the requirements of the ordinance and consider the recommendations that would afford the resources additional and much needed protection. So I think that DENREC, who are the state experts, are saying that's not enough. And I just like to point out a couple of the comments by DENREC. In the April 2015 PLUS report and elsewhere, DENREC has pointed out that Lewis's drinking wells would be afforded more protection if the village center remained agricultural. That three of the shallow wells are highly vulnerable to contamination and need greater protection. That the well field is particularly susceptible to petroleum hydrocarbon intrusion, automobiles, and that includes benzene, which is a carcinogenic substance, and probable carcinogenic substances, that impervious cover of the development should not exceed, in all events, 50% of the development, that impervious covers can result in the release of sufficient pollutants to degrade Lewis's water wells, that any stormwater management facility should be removed from the wellhead protection area, and that the storage of hazardous substances should not be allowed within the wellhead protection area unless specific approval was obtained from, among others, the relevant local program, which I would submit would be Lewis Board of Public Works. Now, of course, the Village Center will have more than 50% impervious cover, despite what DENREC says, that's it. Stormwater management facilities will be within the wellhead protection area, even though DENREC says they shouldn't be, as well as 11.7 acres comprising the Village Center and most of the remaining 50-plus acres in this parcel. As Mr. Gordon pointed out, almost all of it is within the wellhead protection area. So if you got this problem, and I think that the concern is so serious, you should not approve it. But if you're looking at dealing with these issues, you would have binding covenants between the developer and the city, which would provide as much protection as possible to the groundwater wells. And in this case I'll discuss in a few minutes, that's what the developer agreed. He had binding covenants with the residential group that said, for example, there would be no gas stations in this development. And that was not only binding on him, but it's binding on his successors.
It's now, in the title?
Yeah.
Within the title of the
property. And I might add, though, that in the Dexis case, which is a 2001 case involving Sussex County, the council actually imposed 12 conditions before they approved the rezoning. But I think covenants are a better mechanism. They ensure, give comfort to the residents, to somebody's, and to the, in this case, to the city, that somebody's looking out for their interest. Now, as far as traffic is concerned, the absence of a traffic impact study required by state law is required by 9 Del C 6962. When we talk about the Deskus case, then Vice Chancellor Jacobs, who later served in the Delaware Supreme Court, he said 6962 requires a traffic impact study. DelDOT itself has said that there should be a traffic impact study based on their standards. But Mr. Brockenbrough says, oh, well, we had this study. It was 10 years ago. It's still valid. Well, you heard Mr. Lenhart. It's not. And then there's a 1988 MOU between the county and DelDOT that also provides for a traffic impact study. Now, DelDOT, as I mentioned, claims that even a traffic impact study would be required by its policies. There's no need for one because it's the one done 10 years ago. However, that study, as Mr. Leonard pointed out, is no longer relevant. And we don't know from the study whether, if there's less traffic, the conditions are going to be improved. Among other things, it used a growth factor for background traffic of 1.1%. As ERM points out in the city traffic study, the growth factor since 2014 is over 3%. The study did not also, the 2006 study also did not factor in future traffic growth, such as the Mitchell property, which I understand is for sale, the Lingo Townsend parcel on Clay Road, the BB Hospital property, none of that's in there. Now, a new traffic study, as Mr. Lenhart laid out, needs to be prepared based on actual traffic counts, a proper growth factor, and consideration of all future development. As consideration must be given to what ERM also calls peak of peak traffic. That's traffic that actually exceeds the seasonal peak traffic. Now, as I said, I've lived in Lewis for 66 years, and It seems like there's an event every weekend there, which is great for the economy. It's great for the city, brings people in, restaurants prosper, businesses prosper. But that creates peak traffic, and that needs to be evaluated. There's already existing congestion. And there's, you look at, and the study that was done in 2006 doesn't deal with one of the real critical intersections we're going to see is Savannah Road and Gill's Necks Road right there in Front Street. Now, this is from the 1988 MOU, which the county has with DLDOT, and which we have in Newcastle County. It provides that when DLDOT determines on the basis of a traffic impact study, of course they don't have one here, that a rezoning could cause a threshold level of service to be exceeded. And Mr. Lenhart has already pointed out all a number of these intersections are failing below the threshold service, which is level D in Sussex County. The county will not rezone the property unless the developer takes appropriate measures to maintain operations at the threshold level. Well, there's nothing been done here that's going to maintain that D that we're aware of for all these intersections, plus the critical one, which is not included in the 2006 study, the Gill's Neck Savannah Road. So, if they can't take appropriate measures to bring the level of service up to D, Sussex County must find that the benefits to the general public outweigh the detriment caused by the decline in the level of service. Sussex County, in the latter case, shall set forth in writing their reason for approving the rezoning. As I mentioned, there's no traffic study here, so we don't even get to the first part of this. But the benefits to the general public do not outweigh the detriment caused by this declines in level of service specified in 1988 MOU. Among others, the city's water wells are threatened. Ambulance and fire service is going to be delayed. Local business such as Lloyd's Market will be adversely affected by the rezoning. And they talk about needing Janssen's. Well, Janssen's, where I live in Wilmington, is right down the street. I prefer to deal at Lloyd's Market, fresh from the farm to the market. You don't need to build another shopping center. Lloyd's will be out of business if they do. Finally, I'm going to mention the barley mill case, which I spent several years. We took 3 years to bring that case. We won at the Chancery Court, and we won 5-0 in the Supreme Court. It took them about 3 weeks to write their decision, and it was written by the Chief Justice. There, the council was falsely led to believe that a traffic study was not required until after the zoning was approved. And we argued against that, and two of the council members said, we want a traffic study. And they didn't provide a traffic study, just like here. They said, Mr. Brockenborough, who's the architect of all this, and I communicated with him in 2015, urging him to do a traffic impact study, but he resisted because he knows what the impact will be, I submit. He said, we're going to do a TOA. Well, they neither presented a TOA nor a traffic impact study. Just the same thing they're doing here. And so the Supreme Court said, council members asked for a traffic study. They weren't given one. That was arbitrary, and the rezoning was invalid. And I would urge the council here to say, I want a traffic study.
I've already said it.
Well, if you can say it very clearly for the record, it would, because that's what we need here. We need a traffic impact study.
But does it take the council, a majority of the council, to ask for
no,
that? Or just one or
there,
two?
Just, there were two members there, one member.
That's what I'm asking.
Yeah. But just even absent that, even absent that, it's clear that a traffic study was required here. I mean, even if nobody asked for it. Okay, I won't take any more of your time. Any questions?
Yes, I have. I hear, you know, scuttlebutt. Oh, MOUs are no good. They're not legal. They don't hold up in court, so on and so forth. I don't know about 1988 MOU between the county and DelDOT. You're referring to that?
Yeah.
I'll have to look at that because I didn't know about
it. April 1988, it was apparently amended in June.
In June?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay.
The one on Newcastle
and
County.
I don't know if what kind of weight it has, but it's well, intent.
Yeah, I think it's intent. Clearly expresses the intent.
Intent.
Yeah.
I got a question for you, sir.
Yeah.
You talked about binding covenants and other things. We've been counseled over the years that it's difficult for the county council to impose like contract zoning. In other words, we've got to look at it. We either zone it or we don't. We can't put conditions to it under our ordinance. Is that your interpretation, or
well,
do you think we can, as a council, ask an applicant to put deed restrictions or covenants?
I think you can ask. My view is I think you can ask an applicant. In Newcastle County, what happened at Barley Mill, the developer got together with the residents beforehand and said, this
just the way to work it. You're trying to work it out.
Work
right.
Out.
Okay, right. Okay. But
so it wasn't a case where council said.
Okay.
Because
we've been, I think, told by our council that we can't do that.
I would have your council look at the Deskus case. I don't know the situation there, but they. Council then imposed 12 conditions.
He probably knows it verbatim.
Yeah, it was a rezone. I have to read it again.
It was
either
a rezoning.
I don't know because in rezonings there's not an opportunity to put conditions on approvals unless it's an RPC rezoning.
My view is that should defer and let the if you think about you should pass it, which I don't think you should, but if you wanted to see what it would look like. Then you defer decision until they work it out with DENREC, with the city.
Well, chances are things will get deferred today because of all the information. So we do have an opportunity. And the other thing was when back with DENREC, I guess it was with the wellhead protection, all that stuff. The only suggestion that I could find in here, they just basically was to deny the application. They didn't have any other remedy.
Right.
So it's either because of that, they're saying because of the because of the lack of strength of our ordinance, our weak ordinance, we should just, in other words, not try to, again, I guess we can't impose anything on it because we can't do that.
I don't know what's in the letter. In their plus report, they did not say it should be denied. They just said, these are our recommendations. So I don't know whether,
I'll have to look back in there. Okay.
I don't know what's in the letter.
Mr. President, may I?
Mr. Arlett.
Though we love Newcastle County, of course, because they're part of the first state, we are not them.
I love Sussex County.
Just for the record, so, just in reference to their decision up there and anyways, but
But it's a different, just so we're clear on that, Barley Mill in Newcastle County was a different process, though, than what we have, because in Barley Mill, the rezoning was part of a preliminary site plan. It was all wrapped together. So in Barley Mill, they had a plan for development, according to the Chancery Court and Supreme Court.
Yeah, but that had nothing to do with it, whether they had a preliminary site plan or not. That was because there was a lot of pre-litigation fighting about the site. But
That's not what the court case said. The court case said that the Uniform Development Code in Newcastle County required as part of that particular application, because it was a redevelopment and then there was a rezoning component of the redevelopment, that they actually had a plan to consider, and that's sort of what led to a lot of the discussions.
I spent about 1,000 hours on that case.
I don't dispute that.
I was a 1,000 hours of free legal service, and believe me, they were quite willing to accept it. And that was not a key finding that case. I sat through Justice Glasscock, who's from Sussex County, incidentally, and he's a brilliant guy, and he ruled in our favor, and then went up to the Supreme Court and was 5-0. So nothing to do with a plan being there. It's just they didn't do a traffic study.
It's how can you make a decision if you don't have the information?
Yeah, right? Why wouldn't you want the information? Of course you would. You want to make an informed decision. You want to make the best decision you can.
Well, we're going to hear from DelDOT, so we'll, then they've heard you. So yeah, we'll see what kind of response. I can't wait to hear the response. Well, I think it's holding the audience.
They told me, Mr. Brockenberg told me a letter. Well, why does Sussex County need a traffic impact study? And I said, well, I didn't respond to that, but I asked him to look at the Deskus decision where the chancellor said, you need a traffic study, even in Sussex County, which I think is correct.
Just the other comment, Mr. President, if I may, I too look forward to DelDOT's response and their input to this application. So, but beyond that, also DENREC, as it relates to the study that you had referenced, and I think the town also made mention of it earlier, is that when the high school across the street was expanded and built, and all of the concrete and all of that was created over there and placed over there, where was truly, I want to know, where was that concern and where was DENREC's response to that?
Well, these people won't know.
I don't know, but that argument to me is a weak argument because it says there's already an existing problem. So what does it matter if we increase the risk? To me, that says if there's an existing issue, I should try to minimize my risk by not approving this rezoning.
But I don't think you just heard what I said. What I said is that I was curious to know what the response was.
That's what
was my response.
Yeah,
that was my answer.
I don't know.
Okay.
I honestly don't know.
So I'm not. Anyways.
Yeah.
So. Very good. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
6 years.
Next witness is Mr. Matico, is the president of the Lewis Partners for Managing Growth.
Sorry, getting that microphone better. I don't know.
I'm sorry. It's Mr. Matico, president of the Lewis Partners for Managing Growth. And hopefully, I'll be back before he's finished.
LPMG.
If not, Mr. Crawford.
There we are.
Thank you so much. Mr. Lank, would it be your desk that receives?
Drop it on it anyway.
Drop it on me. Whatever.
George, you got the gavel. Sorry, we don't need it right now.
I'm just saying.
We're trying to get equal poundage here. Thank you for this opportunity. Mr. Ouellette has wisely begun the focus on the actual need for the shopping and taking care of these local people so they don't have to drive all over the place to go out and get a loaf of bread. And the mayor has touched upon it, and Mr. Lenhart, I think, amplified it. I'm going to try to flesh that out as my primary point, because it seems to me that's the keystone of this whole issue. Because it's been how many hours now we've heard about negatives, but there's got to be a benefit. Otherwise, why are we doing it? It's not legal. So I am going to address the presumption that there's a benefit. And let's see if it holds up with the facts. Let me go through this boilerplate stuff. I'm John Matejko, 304 Pilottown Road, and I speak as president of the Lewis Partnership for Managing Growth. The organization represents citizens in and immediately around Lewis. Its board of directors includes architects, planners, Lewis civic leaders in historic preservation, senior community services, state and federal government service. We are highly supportive of well-planned development. And to illustrate that, the members of this organization were all involved, one or the other, in that large stack of materials that I've just placed in front of Mr. Lank to introduce into the record. They all have to do with planning reports, planning studies, seminars that took place in Lewis, or materials that were disseminated in Lewis. And to help you appreciate what's in there, I have
a summary.
Sure.
A listing of the materials in there. I would just point for the record that there is the city of Lewis was party to no less than 8 full-day or multi-day seminars at the Verdon Center, most of which were also co-sponsored by Sussex County. At the P&Z hearing, one of the gentlemen raised up the question, if all of this stuff is such a problem to you folks, water and traffic and whatnot, why didn't you ever talk about it, raise it up? I think that qualifies as about 8 inches of raising it up. These seminars have taken place almost on an annual basis, roughly, from the year 2000 to 2008. That's one type. I just want to make clear in the record that probably as much as any city in the state, Lewis is curious about the environment and how to grow and prosper. We seem to be doing okay. Not so good with the traffic, but we don't have very much control over that. Mr. Google and Mr. Deldot will tell us more about that. But the areas that we do have some control over, we seem to be doing okay, and we'd like to keep it on that track because that's good for everyone. It's important economic source for the county as well, as, and you all know that very well.
I'm an architect. I have myself 40 years experience in sustainable development. We're going to talk about this, so I always want to supposed to mention this. I have a master's degree in architecture and advanced graduate studies in urban design and planning. I've served as the president of the State Board of Architects, on the board of the American Institute of Architects in Delaware, and for a decade chair their sustainability program, and I now serve as chair of the National Committee of Architects, the National Council of Architecture Registration Boards, examining the role of architects, beefing that up in licensing and so forth, with regard to sustainability and sustainable design. The first thing I want to mention here, and this is the important thing, I'm going to introduce this into the record. It's a book, Principles of Urban Retail Planning and Development by a Mr. Robert Gibbs, who is enormously famous and influential and must make a ton of money, because you can go online and just see how many dozens, perhaps hundreds, of retail marketing analyses his firm has done using the standard guidelines, the American Planning Association, and a important group in this, the International Council of Shopping Centers. I'm going to introduce this into the record too, but they have extensive materials online, which I would encourage the council to peruse, to flesh out the points I will make. Another important organization is the, in Washington, D.C., the Urban Land Institute, Mr. Ed McMahon, not that one, but another one, is a senior fellow there, and he used to live, actually, I'm not sure that he still does, in Lewis, had a weekend house here, spoke at many of those seminars sponsored by Sussex County and the city of Lewis, and advocated for the type of analysis that you're going to see discussed here. And that is also actually discussed by the International Council of Shopping Centers. And that is this whole notion of smart growth and getting shops to people where they are, which is what happens with Lloyd's.
in Lewis. Many of us know how to walk there through the parks and so forth, and you can do shopping in beautiful weather like this without even having to drive, or you can drive. It's convenient, close, and quick. That is the type of small-scale shopping that is being described as the goal. But they are going about it in a way that is contrary to all of the data in the trade guidelines. Lloyd's, for instance, is 3,700 square feet. Used to be packed all the time before Five Points. Has much more capacity in it to deal with more shoppers. But it's only 3,700 square feet. In the data provided by the urban retail analysts, they identify different categories of shopping centers. And on page 8 of this, the author identifies neighborhood shopping centers, which is pretty close to what the application is before you. And it includes this statement. The International Council of Shopping Centers and the Urban Land Institute, that Ed McMahon, who's quite famous in the United States for this type of analysis, define a neighborhood center as follows. A neighborhood center provides for the sale of convenience goods like foods, drugs, sundries, and personal services for the day-to-day living needs of the immediate neighborhood. That's what's being proposed. It's built around a supermarket, or sometimes with very, very large drug stores, but more likely a supermarket. Typically contains gross leasable space of around 60,000 square feet, but it could range anywhere from 30 to 100,000 square feet, depending on the conditions. 100,000 might be a big city. Goes on the following page 9. Most neighborhood centers have between 50 and 70,000 square feet in total area, which usually includes a supermarket. So that's what we're talking about. And here is where this gets very interesting for your deliberations. The applicant has said it's a no-brainer to have this because if you have a place where people can shop, it's going to reduce traffic. It's more convenient to them. Why wouldn't you do that? In fact, we have argued that as well. But we do it with actual precision of the data of the real world, the way architects build and planners plan. You don't pick these numbers out of the hat. It's like you going home and saying, I want to be like Bill Gates and have a 600,000 square foot house. You don't do that. This is the equivalent of what's being told to you here, that you need 75,000 square feet. Remember, Lloyd's is 3,700. It satisfies all of Lewis. Does a good job, too. But what does this say? Now we're talking about the size of a neighborhood shopping center. So what does the data show? To be economically sustainable, a neighborhood center needs 6,000 to 8,000 households within its primary trade area. I'm going to repeat that. To be economically sustainable, a neighborhood center needs 6,000 to 8,000 households within its primary trade area. So you have not heard in all of these hours the word sustainable.
Thank you.
retail or sustainable trade area. You have to ask yourself why that's missing. Simply because something like the traffic study doesn't have any TIS to back it up. This is the type of hard data that backs up the claim that this center is actually needed to provide a benefit for the community. It is no benefit for anybody in Gill's Neck or Lewis, and they have said that over and over to this developer, to put in a center as large as they are proposing, because, as we can see here, some 6,000 to 8,000 households will have to come there. Now, where are those households coming from? Well, I can tell you, I don't know if he was accurate or not. For some reason, I don't know why Mr. John Lingo told us this, but there were 8 members of the board of the Lewis Partnership for Managing Growth. We had a very, very nice hour-long meeting with John Lingo in his Lewis office. Has a beautiful view overlooking the fields there. And for whatever reason, he proceeded to tell us the following. We're working with DelDOT to bring traffic down Clay Road off of Old Orchard from New Road. That's how we'll get the traffic there. So he informed us for whatever, I don't know why he wanted to do that, but he did. I appreciate it very much. That they are anticipating taking traffic from outside the area, because they fully well know, even if they haven't reported it here for good reason, that they need 6,000 to 8,000 households. Households, rooftops. Retail follows rooftops. In Lewis, year-round, we have about 20, mayor tells me, about 2,600 people, so roughly maybe half of that in rooftops. So we're nowhere near this. We're going to have, at full build-out, including Governors and Schofield and all the rest, we're going to have 2,000 households, rooftops. You see, you know, people need a meal, or they want to repair their computer, or they have their lawn furniture broken. So you measure rooftops. That's the accurate measure of buying ability, of demand, supportable demand. There's only 2,000, not 6,000 to 8,000. In Lewis itself, there's only about another 1,600. Where are all these other people coming from? They're coming off of Route 1. To what some people judged last year to be the most beautiful small town in America, that the National Park Service has set as a national landmark, the birthplace of our state. We all love it. It's an economic engine for the whole state and for this beautiful place. Everybody wants to keep it just the way it is. You've heard people say it threatens the water, it threatens the traffic, but I'm getting down to the base keystone. Does it have to be at all? This data says no. And in that large packet, there's an example of an actual, for another project, we don't have the funds to do these. These tend to be expensive. If you want to go into a business, this is the way to go. Forget being a doctor. This is it. Because you can determine the value, or you're going to go out of business if you get this wrong. So serious developers, you pay for this. You want to know this, because you're not going to get a serious tenant to move in unless you have this report to show. Because the actual breakdown, which you'll see in the report I submitted, will say for Lewis, you could support another so many hundred feet of Italian deli. so many more hundred feet of a takeout Chinese food.
John, I don't think we're deciding what kind of store it should be, whether it'll be successful or not. That's not our decision, I don't
think. Yeah, but the point is, the point is that we are nowhere near a justification for 75,000 square feet or a B1 of 75,000 square feet.
There are a lot of
because people, there's no support.
We don't know exactly what it's going to be.
And in fact, we have no way of knowing what the actual density is going to be. Before we were talking about in terms of the traffic, the opinion of our good friends in DelDOT, well, this is less. I don't know where their crystal ball is. How does anyone know that? If you look at what we had before, 215,000 on the full acreage, that was less than the rate that we're going at this now. We're putting 75,000 square feet on 11 acres. If you multiply that out, it's actually going up, not down. Nobody knows that, which way it's going, because the applicant, despite some requests, has not submitted their overall plan. They won't know on the record telling us, here's the overall plan, what the mayor was asking for. And without the overall plan, you have no way of knowing what is coming. Is the density going to wind up being greater or less? They won't tell. So there's no way to find out. That's not the way government usually operates, especially with a discretionary rezoning. So I would ask you to deny the rezoning, perhaps suggest that an AR1 conditional should be looked at after you also have a complete TIS report and a complete delineation of the current wellhead. I simply want to point out that the delineation, the extent of the wellhead was done in 2003. Now, every time you put a new garage or a subdivision and you cover up more of the permeable soils with impervious, you change that calculation. It's vastly changed.
What was that in 2003?
That delineation.
Where?
Of the wellhead protection area. That goes back to what was valid, good science,
2003.
In 2003. Okay. Actually, maybe a year before that or so, because it takes a while to get everything out. So one of the things to actually do real planning here, and we would have no objection to real planning, it'd be a good idea, would be to get an accurate delineation of the wellhead. The city of Lewis's hydrologist said that only costs maybe $10,000, $15,000. Why wouldn't you do that? Spending more on lawyers on this thing.
What's kind of, I'm sorry, the study was
2003.
It's based on the maps are based on Department of Natural Resources maps, and they're incorporated by reference into our ordinance. So it would be the last time that DNREC decided to do a map.
Source Water Protection map?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was a long time ago.
Yeah, well, so that's DNREC.
So that's what we're talking about. Yeah.
That's
okay,
right.
Okay, and that how does that...
It could grow.
He's saying we should get a new map.
Yeah.
Or look at it.
Just like you need a TIS to know what the real traffic is,
you need
a real, and it's not very expensive.
I got it.
I don't know why it's not being...
How often do aquifers change, though?
It's not the aquifer, it's the amount of coverage. You know, with each house, and there's been hundreds.
Right, okay. All right.
For instance, a friend of mine who lives on Drake Knoll, his house backs up to a creek there. Years ago, when I was go there over to a party, there'd be water in it. Not anymore. It's bone dry almost all the time. And that's the effect of this. So we need to have real numbers, because right now there is a section of this property where you could have built it. The applicant could have come in today showing that they could build a little center closer to the people on Gill's Neck, because logically it's for the people on Gill's Neck. That's what they're saying.
Yeah.
And it's probably a good idea, welcome, to get it a little bit away from the high school, And from what you've heard today, at least from Mr. Gordon, it would be very welcome to get it away, as far away as possible. In fact, some of your laws say that. Get it as far away as possible, if not completely. At least make that effort from the wells. Now, all of that could have been accomplished with the current delineation, but what the science is saying, that's so old, it's like the TIS, it's really outdated. So
the NREC map?
That's right. Okay. So I would suggest that you ask for a new delineation, deny this, ask for a TIS and a delineation of the wellheads, and bear in mind everything that the mayor and Mr. Gordon have put forth. I would ask you to consider the points I've made, that there is no industry guideline justification for this size of a development. And you can't control it under B1. If you had an AR1 conditional based on a definitive site plan, you could then say, we want to minimize, we want to create a balance. And we hear you that people want to go out and they don't want to have to drive too far. Even if their store's a mile away at Five Points, they want something even closer. You could stick it as far away as you could get it, and that might make some sense, but it has to be small, because if you make it big, these stores are not serving the people here.
Well, I don't know if that's our decision or not. I think that the applicant can do what's under B1.
You know. Okay, right.
You know, I'm just kind of separating the wheat from the chaff in my head anyway.
You know, there's a thing called risk and speculation. Obviously, the developers are speculating there's going to be more growth in the area and that there's a need. And they also think about location and need. I mean, we should look at location and need. And it's probably on that road, you've got mixed uses. You've got B1s, you've got C1s, you've got conditional uses. Now then, I think it would be frowned upon the county if we looked at a conditional use. Years ago, it was more appropriate, but now that the character of the neighborhood has changed, it doesn't seem like, at this point, anybody would want to put a residential house on that area because of the, again, traffic and other things. So it lends itself more to probably a commercial application. And because we already have B1s and C1s, it's probably the best way and vehicle for us to address it. So we either, like you say, turn it down or approve it. But all this other stuff is, again, they're speculating, which is what developers do. They anticipate that there's going to be a need for it. So,
and that's right.
And they've expressed to us that there is a need because of all this new growth. So.
Here, to be very clear, they're not coming to you and asking you for rezoning based on speculation.
No.
They're coming to you and saying, we need a rezoning. This was their exact words.
Right.
Because we have over all these 2,000 houses,
mm-hmm.
Which to a layperson may sound like that's a lot of houses. You wouldn't want to clean those. But actually, to a planner like Ms. Cornwall, it's way overscaled. Lloyd's at 3,700 square feet, services all of Lewis. You know, the data shows nationwide, 20, 25, 30, something in that range, any of that, not equivalent, but that makes sense according to the data. This other size that they're proposing and that you would have no control over if you gave them a B1 has to bring in, as Mr. John Lingo pointed out, traffic from Route 1 to keep the lights
sure.
on.
Sure.
And that's not, it's exactly the opposite of their argument to justify a public benefit.
I'm sure a lot of people in Lewis ride out to the Food Line or the Giant. I can't imagine they're all going to Lloyd's.
Okay. And that's, of course, true. But just to be clear, it's
a nice little store.
I shop at both.
They do a heck of a good job.
But the point is that they're making is that this is for, and that's what a neighborhood center is, and as I read the description to you, it's for daily needs. It's not for the big shop and the weekend, but it's, as we all do, what you need for tonight to pick up something, so you don't have to make that separate trip. That's where it makes sense, But Lloyd's is 3,700 square feet. You have to deal with the real reality. They are proposing way too much. All of those cars going there, I don't know, they're buying computers or something else that they don't need to be going to that congested area to buy. That has already been provided in the infrastructure and the planning.
But they're just asking for B1.
On Route 1. That's where it's supposed to be.
They're asking for B1. Where's the 75,000 square feet? I didn't see that.
And that's the whole total shopping center.
That's what you can have.
Right.
That's what you can have.
So one store may not be 75.
No.
They may have a 37,000 square foot.
That's right.
I didn't understand.
That's right. Up to,
And other stores.
Okay.
It could be, though. It could have one large store.
No, we get it. I think we get it.
Yeah. All right. I want to thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Did you have a question?
Well, actually, Mr. President, I'm sorry.
Yes, sir, Mr. Ormond.
We were given this summary, if you would, by Mr. Mateo, right?
Mm-hmm.
I apologize. I forgot the K. I corrected myself. But there are 36 items, and does Mr. Lank have these items?
Right here.
Oh, yeah.
Right here.
Okay. Well, I cannot wait to read the letter that was given to the governor. I'm so intrigued with what the governor would have to say in reference to this rezoning of in this county.
Well, it was just given on the 22nd.
For the record, did you get a response from the governor?
Not yet.
Okay, thank you.
With respect to the Lewis Partners for Managing Growth, that concludes our formal, because I know that you have a Dell Dot guy here. There are other people that are affiliated with the Lewis Partners. But they're going to be speaking in opposition, so we don't delay the Dell Dot person anymore. I just forgot to sign in people before.
Were they speaking for it?
No. I talked to Mr. Crawford. He's got an organized group. What we're going to do is allow Dell Dot to go next.
Yes.
Then I spoke to Ms. Van Gilder, because she's not in favor of or in opposition to. She's going to go next, and then it's going to be in favor, and then it'll be opposition.
Okay.
Started with Mr. Crawford.
Okay.
So.
All right. No, I might have misspelled Mr. Mateo's
name.
No, okay. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Cervic. Next is Dell Dot. So, Mr. Sammons.